Blog Talk Radio.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Corner. It's been several months since we've been with you, but things have been kind of crazy with the COVID outbreak. But we're back. We have some Star Trek comic books to talk about, and the entire crew is here with us. So let's start off with TJ from Freakopolis Geekery. How you doing tonight, TJ?
I'm doing very well. It's very good to be back aboard your guys' starship once again, talking some comics. It's been much too long. Yeah, it's really good to have some books again and be here with you guys.
It is, and hopefully sometime we can get back into the store and start doing some games and try to get back to some semblance of normalcy again, hopefully.
Yes, I miss the gaming very much.
But we'll just do what we can for now. And we also have with us Jamie. How you doing tonight, Jamie?
Good.
Sorry, I threw you
back.
Out of your room. And, I'm sorry I threw you out of your room and hijacked your computer.
Well, it's fine. We have to keep the show going somehow. We just had some technical difficulties, you know.
The show must go on. Some trouble on the bridge,
but we're fine.
Yep, Uhura patched us right up. We also have with us Charles. He's out in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Ready to be back talking comic books.
Oh, it's been a while. It's going to be fun. And we also have with us, last but not least, Eric. He's out in Portland. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm doing really great. It's great to have the team back together. I'm excited about both these books tonight.
It's been a while. You guys may have noticed we have a different intro for this particular show. We didn't start the series. And the reason why I did that is because tonight we're talking about Star Trek Year 5, Issue 11 and Issue 12. So it's a total TOS night. So I decided, let's go with a TOS theme. So that's what we did. And I figured that would put us right in the mood to talk some Star Trek. So we're going to be talking Star Trek Year 5, Issue Number 11, and Issue Number 12. Basically, the Enterprise is on. It's been a while, so I'm going to try to catch you guys up really briefly before I turn over to TJ here. The Enterprise has been recalled from its five-year mission, and they're on their way back to Earth. But, of course, in the world of Star Trek, nothing ever goes as planned. So on their way back to Earth, the Enterprise has had some pretty interesting things happen. The latest thing that has happened, which has been an ongoing thing, is Gary Seven and Isis show up. And you guys might remember them from Assignment Earth. He's the time-traveling dude with the black cat there that stops the missile from exploding and blah, 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 blah from TOS. They show up. And this time, the mission's not quite what the Enterprise crew is used to. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. If you'd like to get on the air with us and talk about the comic book or just call and say hello, we'd love to hear from you. And without any further ado, I will turn it over to TJ. We're going to talk about issue number 11 first. Take it away, TJ.
All right, yeah, thanks for setting it up so well. So we open with Isis and Gary Seven in this very Tholian-looking chamber getting ready for their raid on the Enterprise, basically. Gary Seven looking very sinister and Isis quite relaxed. But we sort of return to, like, the very first issue of Star Trek Year 5 in these two issues. We saw in that first issue some stuff that we'll see a little later on. In issue 12, it sort of circles back to some things like that. But one thing to note, I think, is we get mission logs from Gary Seven's perspective in these two issues, and it brings back this sort of Homer Odysseus theme that we saw. We've kind of seen it sporadically throughout, but it really set the stage in the first issue of Captain Kirk being this Odysseus-type character who's making his way back to Earth, and yeah, like you said, is always running into numerous issues. And so we see Gary Seven like also in on that sort of analogy and metaphor. And I really like that sort of literary element and device that's being used to compare Kirk to, you know, one of history's greatest heroes. So we open on them, and they pretty much they get set and beam over to the Enterprise. Gary Seven goes invisible, and Isis sets out sort of patrolling the halls of the Enterprise. Meanwhile, Spock and Kirk is back to walking around. We saw him get healed from his coma. He came out of his coma thanks to the magical waters from the Icosan oceans. But in the meantime, Spock was captain of acting captain of the Enterprise. And so Kirk takes Spock aside to give him a captain's review, a command review, and says, hey, the stuff that happened on Icosa, which if you've read issue 10 or listened to previous Comic Corners, you know, basically turned into a giant civil war with the crew of the Enterprise sort of being the spark that sets the barrel ablaze. But Captain Kirk, you know, insists Spock did the best he could do under the circumstances. And he has nothing to be ashamed of as in his time as acting captain. Spock obviously feels he could have done much better. That's very Vulcan of him, I think. Meanwhile, we see Isis and the invisible Gary Seven trolling their way into the engine room where Uhura and Scotty and some other red shirts engineers are making a, as they call it, a walking kiln for Bright Eyes, our Tholian child, who is now beginning to speak to the crew and has taken sort of residence up inside of the USS Enterprise and is the impetus for their return to Earth, as well as Gary Seven's sort of contention with the Enterprise and reason for his nefarious deeds that he's about to pull. We get some funny moments with Bright Eyes insisting on they being called, using the pronoun they, as well as the sort of translator module that Uhura made for them, acting kind of funky. But before too long, Gary Seven reveals himself along with Isis, takes control of the ship, and releases an Amdorian nerve agent that sort of floods the engine room, with Bright Eyes insisting they'll protect. So they're kind of acting as, you know, just as much part of the crew or an ally as any other member of the Enterprise. Quickly, Scotty and Uhura and the rest of the engineers lock Gary Seven inside the door, or inside the engine room. But it doesn't much matter because he has what he needs at this point. Gary Seven and Isis begin to drain the Enterprise of its oxygen, basically deoxygenates the whole of the ship and mess with many systems. But not before a sort of security team makes their way in. Unfortunately, they are taken out pretty quickly by Gary Seven and Isis. But Chekov finally gets sort of the jump on Gary Seven. Clearly feeling, I think, kind of distraught over what happened on Icosa previously, and with nothing to lose. Gets a jump on Gary Seven, only for Gary Seven to sort of dispatch Chekov pretty quickly. So, the oxygen levels and environmental controls are draining from the ship. Captain Kirk awakes and begins to set out for the bridge, where he is going to hopefully wrest control back of the Enterprise from Gary Seven and put an end to his plot. In the meantime, he hatches a plot to sort of he commands the crew, all of the crew of the Enterprise, to abandon ship, knowing that things aren't going to get any prettier on the Enterprise for just a moment. And so the crew, the entire complement of the Enterprise, take shuttles down, escape pods, to Circe 5, I believe it's called. It's the nearby moon, basically, that they're sort of not far from. Isis also heads down there. So now Gary Seven and Captain Kirk are the remaining players on the Enterprise, while the rest of the crew and Isis have gone down to this moon that they're nearby. We get a great monologue from Captain Kirk about sort of him and Gary Seven's previous relationship, as well as, you know, calling him out and saying, you know, basically, come and get me. And then we get a supplemental log from Gary Seven, which sort of rebrings that Greek mythology, Homer-esque analogy to a new sort of point in its life, I guess. He says, Kirk is not Odysseus at all. He's every Cretan boy before Theseus who ever set into the labyrinth thinking they understood the maze, thinking they could kill the monster in the dark. Sure, they could best the Minotaur, but he's blind. The maze is time. Oh, the Enterprise isn't the maze. It's just a place. The maze is time, and I am the Minotaur. Basically, you know, very sinister, calling out Captain Kirk, saying, you know, he's got some respect for him, but with time, he will become victorious. And this issue number 11 leaves us off with Captain Kirk and Gary Seven facing off, sort of guns drawn on the bridge of the Enterprise, and leads straight into issue number 12, which concludes this sort of thread that's been basically woven throughout the whole past 12 issues. So I thought this was super fun. You know, the Star Trek Year 5 in general has had sort of these like 1-2 punch arcs. This is obviously the setup, and the knockout comes in the next issue. But we get some clarity on what exactly Gary Seven's plan was. We get some really cool stuff about, you know, like I said, I really admire that literary reference and analogy that's being used throughout this. We also get to see some characters that I don't think have appeared in Year 5, but they did show up in the Star Trek The Animated Series versus Transformers comics. Lieutenant Eryx shows up in this issue, and we'll see in the next issue that we see another familiar face from that series. So that was kind of cool, a nice nod for the writers and editors to say, like, hey, why aren't they here? This is sort of when they would be, and it totally makes sense, and we can basically do whatever we want because this is comic books. So we don't have to pay the actor or anything. We just got to draw a couple of panels with him in it, and there we go. I think another solid setup issue for sure. Get some cool, some really great character moments, which has been the strength of this book throughout, as well as some more development from Bright Eyes, who has turned into what I think is a really interesting character. And we're like right on the cusp of what I think is a really climactic issue 12. So quite enjoyed it. What did you guys think?
Go ahead, James. You just read it today. What did you think about this issue?
Oh, I have a lot of things on my mind about this one. The first thing I thought was, wow, I don't think they could have had a much stronger storyline. And then as far as Isis goes, I kind of like the idea that he had the cat with him. Kind of reminded me of Data with Spots. And then it was kind of a little weird watching the cat go around. Then I remember at one part in the book, Isis was trying to do something, and the cat was just behind and was like, we're trying to do something here. It just reminded me of when we're doing a show and Shadow's on my lap or something, or you just shoo her away. Excuse me, I'm trying to do something, and she puts her two cents in. That was kind of funny. And then I also enjoyed the scene there with Captain Kirk there, and he's just kind of sitting off the side like, hey, wait a minute, what about me? Like, it just seems like he had the short end of the stick for this story. But between Isis and Q, even from the show and all the other books, it seems like these two just would be fine with a book on their own, just a story about Isis and Q. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know if anyone else thinks that.
How about you, Charles? What'd you think?
Well, for one thing, I think we've a couple of times talked about using the evacuation pods, but we've never actually seen them in full use where they've actually landed with them. So I was definitely interested in the fact of seeing them actually able to land on the planet and how people are able to deal with having to get in the pods and then landing on the planet, escaping them. I also thought when Gary Seven took out the environmental control was a great scene. We know that the oxygen levels are going down. Kirk grabs an oxygen mask. Then all of a sudden he's got to deal with the fact that the gravity control is gone. Yet he can still work his way back to the bridge. So, well put together. I love the extra characters added into this one. I don't remember seeing a couple of the animated characters in this one, but they fit in the series very well. And overall, it was a good book, and I was sitting at the point of reading this one. It's like, okay, what's going to happen next? Oh, going to have to wait for issue 12 to come out.
And we didn't have to wait long for that either. That came out pretty quick. How about you, Eric? Issue number 11, Star Trek Year 5.
I really liked this book. Some of the highlights for me were I love that we got to see a little bit more of Gary Seven's tech. You know, I felt like on Assignment Earth, we got to see a little bit here and there, but here it appears that maybe his tie is like kind of a shield to his body or something. He's got some cool colors. He can go invisible. So lots of really interesting technological things that he brings to the table. I really liked the scene between Spock and Kirk too. You know, it kind of made me go back and think, yeah, what was Spock thinking when he went and got so involved? You know, they landed on the planet, and it all comes down to that moment that Chekhov kind of reveals them from hiding. But you know, they were in a high risk situation, so I like that Spock tries to kind of own up to it. And of course, you know, in classic Kirk fashion, he refuses his apology pretty much. I love that Bright Eyes really became a super integral part of the story in this one, and they're even more so in the next one, which I really dug. And I agree with Charles. I really liked seeing the escape pods. I had no idea that that's what the Enterprise's escape pods looked like. So very interesting. Good art in this one. Really excellent writing. Great continuation of the overall story arc. So this one's a hit for me.
If you remember, in the Star Trek 2009 movies, is the first time we actually see the escape pods. Now, granted, it's the Kelvin universe, but we get to see the escape pods, and they call them Kelvin pods, which I thought was pretty cool, actually. So we actually get to see them in the Prime universe. I mean, we know they exist, but we've never seen them. So I thought that was pretty cool that they actually, you know, showed them. That was really neat, I thought.
For sure.
And Gary Seven, he's got like he's got weird powers, you know, and they can't.
Well, he's very mysterious. I mean, if you remember back to Assignment Earth, I mean, he's completely immune to the Vulcan neck pinch. He's got that little thing that is hard not to think of as a sonic screwdriver that can do all sorts of magic.
Yeah.
And you know, in this one, you really see how durable he is, right? He takes like a whatever they call it, a radiation blast or something from, oh, maybe that's the next one. Sorry.
Oh,
anyway,
Tholian blast.
There's some durability exhibited by him in these books. So he's a very interesting character that we haven't. I understand that there's actually been a couple novels about him, and actually there was a back in 2008 there was a 6-issue comic book miniseries that was called Assignment Earth that was kind of a sequel to the television show. But this is the most information, as far as I know, that we've gotten about his character. I think that's really interesting.
I love the Isis the cat. How,
yeah, she's
how
awesome.
I think she's great. How
she's
goes
awesome
back and forth.
No. Oh my god!
And she turns into a Tholian too.
Well, hold on. That's like, the next one. Hold on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. I thought you know, her transforming was really cool. I really liked it, and yeah. I just hope. The one thing about Star Trek that has bothered me over the years, and this is a great time to mention it, is that things that happen on the Enterprise always get left behind and never get revisited ever again. Like, for instance, whatever happened to Moss in Star Trek III? He surrendered. They captured him. In the comic books, if you guys remember, he becomes a member of the crew and serves under Captain Kirk in the Marvel comic books on the Enterprise. But in the Star Trek world, where did he go? Whatever happened to him? You know,
yeah.
The Romulan commander from the Balance of Terror. We never see or hear from her again. And I'm hoping that they carry this Bright Eyes character through and, you know, to a logical conclusion. And so far, he's been in all the books, which I think is great. But
they've been in all the books. And
We know he doesn't make it back to Earth, though, because at least I don't think he makes it back to Earth. But we'll see.
Yeah, I
don't want to go too far because I'm getting the books linked mixed together, because like TJ said, the one book is a setup and it's a direct continuation of book 11. So, TJ, before I ruin too much, why don't we jump right into book 12, because I'm starting to cross that line here.
Yeah, I think then we can talk about them sort of as a, you know, a whole and as a two-parter in totality. So, no surprise, we pick right up right where issue number 11 is let off, and we get sort of a continuation of that captain's log in that it's from Gary Seven's perspective talking about how resilient, strong, surprising Kirk is, really, as they sort of duke it out. We see Kirk get that sonic screwdriver out of Gary Seven's hand with a swift blow. Turn the page, and we've got sort of one of the more, experimental or extreme or dynamic two-page spreads of this whole series, I think. We got a lot of really cool stuff when they were out in space in the Tholian web, but I think this kind of rivals that in this battle, this duel between Captain Kirk and Gary Seven on the bridge of the Enterprise as they fight back and forth, and, you know, each one gains the upper hand and sort of taunt each other in, throughout this, only for Kirk to be up against the console, grab this, the very sonic screwdriver that is Gary Seven's. Well, that's what we'll call it from here on out, because we're not quite sure what this device is. It's not a sonic screwdriver, but, you know, we don't really have any better term, I guess. And plunges it into Gary Seven's eye in one of the more brutal panels of this entire series, I think. Gary Seven looking quite defeated, Captain Kirk feeling like he finally has the upper hand, and feeling like, you know, he's won the day. But we get a really interesting, you know, like you guys were saying, we've been learning a lot about Gary Seven throughout these past few issues. And here in particular, Captain Kirk taunts Gary Seven saying, "Our doctor can even give you something for the pain," referencing his now sort of ruined eye. Gary Seven responds with, "The pain, really, Captain. My ancestors were taken from this earth, or from Earth, over 6,000 years ago. I was bred and trained for a singular purpose: torture, spacing. I've been in the heart of wars that would paralyze a Klingon, and among the way, I've eliminated more threats to history than your entire Starfleet. You think I still feel pain?" So, sort of this Terminator-esque mission, at, you know, do the mission at all costs, no pain, sort of philosophy is present inside Gary Seven that sort of seemingly defeats Spock, or Kirk, rather, as it, he's got Kirk now sitting in the captain's chair with a gun to his head, like the very first panel of the first issue, I think. It was super early on in the first issue. We knew that this moment was coming where Gary Seven had Kirk at gunpoint. We didn't know who it was at the start of the series, but we, as the series went along, we learned who it, this antagonist was, and we find ourselves finally here at this moment. But Kirk is not going to he basically, oh no, Gary Seven commands him to set a collision course with Cersei 5, where the crew of the Enterprise is. Captain Kirk doesn't really understand why he would want to do that, but if he's forced to go down with his ship and sort of take his crew with him, he's going to be the one to do it. So on the planet side, we have Spock sort of taking control of the situation with the crew, gathering sort of opinions, I think, maybe against his own better judgment. He hears from the crew and is told, you know, we really should do something to help our captain. You know, we're here on the planet seemingly helpless, but we're the best of Starfleet, and Kirk's up there getting his butt beat, so let's try and do something. We also see in this issue, or in this little scene here, Emress, who is another member of the Enterprise crew from the Star Trek animated series. So there is our second sort of cameo appearance. We had Lieutenant Eriks in issue number 11 and Emress in this issue. So finally, Spock is convinced to do something when I assume that's Dr. McCoy, yeah, pointing up to the sky and saying, "Hey, the Enterprise is coming crashing down no matter what, so if we don't act now, what are we sitting on our hands for?" Pretty much. And so they hatch a plan to create a transporter on the planet to get themselves, transport somebody to the bridge and hopefully lend a hand to Captain Kirk. But not before, as soon as that plan is hatched, Isis takes human form and begins slaughtering what looks like a squad of red shirts. And the fight has now landed on Cersei 5, as well as the bridge of the Enterprise. Flip the page, and while she may be human on top, she is Tholian on the bottom, which is kind of cool. It's a really interesting character design, and I think it, you know, is sort of a nod to maybe some of that Greek mythology sort of stuff that has been woven throughout this book. Well, Isis is making a mess of tons of red shirts. The crew begin to hold her off while Scotty uses one of the escape pods to hopefully create a transporter to get somebody up to the Enterprise, which is barreling towards the planet. Bright Eyes gives a hand where he can. I think I'm not sure quite exactly what he provides, but he's certainly trying, or they are certainly trying to help. And then, boom, back on the Enterprise, Captain's log, quite a desperate attempt to give one final last hurrah to whoever might find these logs as Captain Kirk sits in the captain's chair with a gun to the back of his head. And this is the exact moment that was present in issue number one that we knew was this has been leading up to, and it was a really desperate moment for our crew and captain. And we basically saw in the first issue, Captain Kirk finished his monologue, his captain's log, and was left as a cliffhanger. And now that resolution is they finished the transporter planet side, and Spock has beamed on to the bridge of the Enterprise. And with that, two against one, Captain Kirk and Spock dispatch Gary Seven, who seems to basically they duke it out. Spock gets a flying knee into his face and a phaser blast hits that tie that Eric mentioned, which explodes and really takes Gary Seven out of commission, but not before he was able to escape using his maybe personal transporter, sonic screwdriver, whatever it is. And he gets down to the planet where we see Isis as a fully black Tholian trying to basically fend off the Starfleet officers as best they can. Gary Seven meets Isis and basically says, "We're retreating. We failed. But we're going to get these guys back at some point. Not today, but we will do our best to get revenge on the crew of the Enterprise." Unfortunately, the Enterprise is still barreling straight towards the planet. Is now within atmosphere. Kirk and Spock figure out a way to plot a course out of atmosphere. Even though the Enterprise is, as Spock reminds us, not designed for atmospheric flight, which I don't know if that's like a reference to the JJ stuff or or what, but the Kelvin universe maybe. There was a lot of the Enterprise, if I remember correctly, flying around in atmosphere in those movies, which who knows, could be a nod. But they managed to pull up just in time. The crew is safe. People are beamed back on the ship, taken to sick bay, and we get a final log from Gary Seven's perspective, basically saying, "I failed. The crew of the Enterprise, quite formidable, but ultimately my failure rests with me." We learn that the Enterprise has finally crossed the border into Federation space. They finally made it home. It's been quite a long time coming, but fortunately, there shouldn't be too many more entanglements between here and Earth as they set course for Earth and hopefully make their way back. We know there's more issues, though, so something is to come. I wouldn't doubt we see Gary Seven return at the end of this series to sort of try his hand at putting the final nail in the coffin. But for now, things are looking up. They've defeated Gary Seven on their way back to Earth. Bright eyes tag along. Hopefully some kind of resolution to the Tholian war is coming. Lots of plot threads still active. And, really great issue. I think, you know, this stuck the landing as far as the two-issue arc went. This was something that they were building up to for quite a while, and it was a super dynamic, very, it felt to me like one of the really good, exciting original series episodes, I think, where lots of action, unique, fun solutions to problems, and really great, touching character moments. They went a little... You know, this book has alternated between artists throughout its 12 issues. This book, this issue in particular, had a litany of artists who have shown up previously. I don't know if that was to just experiment with some different things and, like, show different parts of the story in different light, or if it was a sort of it could also be a timing deadline concern. But overall, I think it worked pretty well. They did some really fun stuff in terms of the action scenes, having really dynamic paneling. That panel sort of half splash with ISIS taking out the squadron of red shirts was really, really exciting. She looks super menacing. They look extremely scared. So, yeah, really, really great comics there. And I think a really strong resolution. We get the, you know, some of that literary stuff sort of coming to a close in its metaphor and analogy, and lots of plots ready to go for whatever the next arc is. What did you guys think?
Well, I thought when ISIS turned into the Tholian thing, it reminded me of The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing. You guys ever see The Thing? The spider creature,
yeah,
and The Thing. I immediately thought, oh, it's The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. That's where my mind went. I was like, that's really cool. Yeah, and I didn't know that ISIS could do that. So I thought that was pretty cool. I did think that the artwork kind of suffered in this one. There were a couple of panels where the characters looked like they were like drawn by a 10th grader. They were very... they weren't very good, I thought. I was like, wow, I expect better from IDW. In a couple of the panels, I actually didn't even know who the characters were because they looked like they were just stick-drawn people. Their faces just didn't resemble the characters at all. Unlike the high quality we've been seeing all along, but like you said, TJ, with the COVID and everything else, and you know, they were changing artists, you know, there's a million reasons why the artwork changes in a book, but I did notice it, and I was like, "Wow, that's not IDW's usual high quality." Getting near the end, there was a couple of scenes where Bones and Scotty were talking, and if I didn't know it was Bones and Scotty, it could have just been some nameless crew member, because the artist, it didn't even look like them. It just looks like some dude that happened to be there. So I did notice the artwork change throughout the book. But it, you know, overall, I enjoyed it. And the only thing I was thinking was, Gary Seven being from the future, you would think that Gary Seven would know that his plot to kill Captain Kirk is going to fail, because we have all the movies, we have Star Trek Generations, we have a million things that happen after the TV show, and you would think that Gary Seven would know that. Right? Wouldn't you?
Well, now you're getting into time paradox arguments, and those can be pretty circular. So be careful there, Jim. It's a deep rabbit hole.
I'm just saying that.
No, seriously. Here's my take on it. I think that it may be that Gary Seven has to come back and do this whole thing for the timeline to be set properly. So in my mind, it's probably... this entire thing this is just a window into something that we haven't seen yet. This has always happened, right? It just, we haven't seen years 4 and 5, so we haven't seen it on screen or anything. And this is just part of the overall arc of the original Enterprise, I think. So I think in the next one, we're going to get a plot twist, or we're going to get something that kind of makes it fit into the whole thing. Because yeah, if he's from the future, he would have to know. But, you know, we also know that even the temporal agents from Enterprise don't always have perfect knowledge of what's supposed to happen, right?
They didn't know that there was Tribbles left behind on Deep Space Nine.
<Did not.
laughs> But,
yeah.
But anyways, it was still a good read. Anyway, I still enjoyed it. So I thought it was still a fun read. So how about you, Jamie? What did you think? You just read it this afternoon yourself.
Yeah, I had a couple of issues with the art. I was a little disappointed, but keeping in mind with the whole COVID thing going on, they probably didn't have a lot of time, and they were working on under a tight deadline, so that's to be expected. But, you know, as far as the whole storyline went, I didn't see any grammatical errors. I didn't see any problem with the plot. I just think they just ran out of time to really perfect the art and of the book itself, but that's okay. It was still readable. Everything made sense. I didn't see any issues in that department. I do think that I think we just haven't seen this character developed enough to really know anything about it. And that did kind of remind me of the thing with when he turned into that Nestholian, and I did kind of really like that scene. And I really liked the artwork there with the Enterprise and whatnot. But there, the characters that you had mentioned, Dad, in this book, that bothered me too. I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't look like that person. And then there's a couple of things in there that didn't really even look like the objects they were talking about. But hey, I just try to ignore it and focus on the artwork. Hopefully the next book will be better, but you just have to go with the flow, I guess.
Just go with the flow. How about you, Charles? What did you think? Are you going with the flow?
Okay. One thing I wanted to do, because I did just a little research while we were talking. TJ, you mentioned the three artists. I actually found a reason why we have a separate artist for page 12. Actually comes out of issue 1. I went looking.
Mm-hmm.
Page 12 is actually the first page of issue 1 of year 5. It's the exact page.
The only thing they did was re-letter
it. They didn't redraw that page. They took it right out of year. They actually took it right out of year 1, page 1, and put it in this issue. So that's why page 12 has its own artist and line person, word person for it, because it was actually published previously.
So
the other two artists, I'm not exactly sure the story on that, but that's why that one page has got its own artist to it, because it's been previously published.
Makes
overall
sense.
I really enjoyed the story. This still felt like another, as I always remind people, year 5 is a they do one issue, that's the first half of the episode, then they do a second issue, and that's the second half. So we get, okay, we get 30 minutes in the first issue, we get 30 minutes in the second issue. I love that tie-in between issues to give us a longer story. Instead of doing one episode per comic book, we get a couple of issues, which means it stretches out. We get that cliffhanger in there. But I think we got some really interesting views of Gary Seven. Bright Eyes got to help power the transporter, to help send Spock up, to help save Kirk. And I think that fight scene with Kirk, it's interesting almost to think that Spock could float a little bit. But that was a great scene. That's a Leslie Hoffman type scene in there. But really, I think it was interesting where we said, okay, something's going on with Gary Seven, and we're going to have to wait and see what's going on. What's the story? And I maybe wonder if Bright Eyes has something to do with the story. That maybe there's an issue with history and Bright Eyes affects something. And Gary Seven has to deal with that specific character. So it's a very well done series. And as always, like, okay, another good pair of episodes. Sure, the drawings could have been a little better in spots. But overall, it's still a good story, and I can't wait to see what they do next.
And Eric, you get to straighten out this whole crooked bag of snakes and bring up the caboose on this. You heard what everybody else said, so now you get to add your 2 cents.
Well, yeah. Let's see. I agree with pretty much everything everybody said, so I'll try and say things that haven't been said yet. So one of the things that I really liked about the opening panel of this one was that I was completely surprised when I opened the book. The style looked totally different, and also the dialogue there. Gary Seven is kind of giving one of those monologues that TJ was talking about, and it almost sounds like he really admires Kirk in that series of panels there, which I thought was really cool, because it's kind of like you know, I really like this guy, but I have to beat him up. the fight scene was great. The thing in the eye, I hate it when people's eyes get messed up. I didn't like it when Icheb died. I don't like this, but that's, you know, had to happen. When ISIS, you know, rips the hearts out of all the red shirts, that was a little intense. But those things aside, the action and everything was really intense in this one, and I dug that. It was kind of like the last one, there was action, but this felt really, really intense. I immediately recognized that panel that was repeated that both TJ and Charles mentioned. I guess the last thing that I will mention about it is that at the very end of this book, on the next to the last page, we get a pretty strong clue as to what the next series is going to be about, because Gary Seven's giving one of his little monologue outros, and he says, "Even now, the Tholian front is advancing. Starfleet is living its final year." So it seems to me that the next series of books is really going to be about, uh-oh, the Tholians are coming. What happens? And I can't remember who said it tonight, but Bright Eyes being a part of that and a part of the resolution of that, and probably the reason that the Earth doesn't get melted to slag by Tholians. So I'm really interested to see how that story goes down. So for me, this one was a great setup for the next series. I really liked it throughout this entire 12 issue run when they brought kind of the Greek myth allegories into things. I really, really liked that. It made me kind of go back and revisit some of those things myself. So it's nice when one piece of content can kind of lead you into wanting to go and do research about its details. So yeah, I agree with Charles. You know, the art wasn't great in this one for me, but that didn't matter, because I thought the story was really good and really interesting, and I'm totally chomping at the bit for the next one now.
Now, TJ, what is the next one? They've been approved. We have 12 more issues of year 5 that we know of, right?
Yes. So we are getting issue number 13 with a date of August 5th. So just a couple weeks here, and we'll be getting the next issue of Star Trek Year 5. We've also got some other releases on the docket. We already have issue number 1 of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Too Long a Sacrifice. I've got a copy for you, Jim. I think that came out last week
Last week. Last week.
And issue number 2 comes out August 19th. But we also have Star Trek Hell's Mirror in shops August 26th, which is the presumably given that it has that mirror sort of theme in the name, and we know a little bit about it. It is Mirror Khan. It's a story following Mirror Khan. So I think we were mentioning it before the show. We're all pretty excited for that, to see what develops there. We're going to get at least 3 Star Trek books next month, in the month of August. So some really cool stuff on the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, especially the Mirror Khan. That's going to be interesting. I'm really, really fascinated to see what they do with that.
Oh.
So.
Just to let you know, I was jumping on and taking a look at a cover art for issue 13. We have a nice white symbol in the front with a red background. I think we're going to be running into some Klingons.
No! Say it isn't so.
Yes. It looks to me like a Klingon issue.
Those pesky Klingons, I tell you what. But, so I just want to let you guys know that on Monday, well, let's go to Thursday first. Thursday on Trek Talk, and you guys definitely want to tune in, because resistance is futile for this one. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to have a very special guest on the line with us. Studio lines will be open, so you can call in with your questions. We absolutely would love to hear from you. A new Intramani is going to be with us. Ichib from Star Trek Voyager will be with us for an hour, the first hour of the show. You guys can call in and talk to him in person about Ichib working on Voyager, working with Jerry Ryan. He's got a new project out called Unbelievable that we're going to be talking about. And, of course, the death of Ichib. How did he feel about them killing off his character? And, you know, why wasn't he the Ichib that was killed off? So we're going to talk about all that stuff on Thursday night. You guys don't want to miss that. So tune in for that. Same bat time, same bat channel. And then next Monday on Book Nook, which is actually Book Nook issue number three, our podcast number three, we're going to have Dayton Ward with us. And we're going to be talking about Drastic Measures. And he's going to be with us to talk about it. Really good book. Really enjoyed it. And he's going to be with us. He also, Charles, what else did he write that we're really looking forward to talking about?
Well, he was one of many authors working on the Star Trek Adventures new book. And this is not going to be a supplementary issue. This will be a second complete book, player book. And this time, the entire focus is going to be on the Klingon.
Yes. So,
and
I'm really excited.
Those that have gotten a chance to see Star Trek Adventures with Starfleet, how you set your path, you go through Starfleet and your where you grew up and your life path. This one, you go through the life path of a Klingon, including your house. And I'm curious about what the education is going to be like with them.
Yes, yeah, so you
I
guys
know the digital
version
is
that.
The PDF version is out, but the hardback has not been released. It's not in storage yet. I can't wait because I've already got mine on order.
And the one thing I want to say about this, what I'm looking forward to talking to Dayton about is, people seem to think, they have in their mind, that the Klingons are a warrior race. And that may be true to some extent, but you can't have an entire race of warriors. It would never function. We know that there's lawyers because we've seen them. There has to be engineers. There's got to be scientists because the society, someone's got to design the ships. Someone's got to build the ships. Someone's got to take care of the ships. So there's a lot more to Klingon culture than just warriors and batlets. So I'm really curious to talk to him about how they fleshed out a lot of those things, because all we ever see are batleth-wielding Klingons, you know, slicing and dicing their way to victory. And there's got to be more to their culture than that. So we're going to talk about it. So you guys don't want to miss next Monday. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. And you don't want to miss Thursday. We're going to be doing a lot of Borg talk. And TJ, what's going on around Freakopolis Geekery? I know there's not any games because of the COVID thing. But what else is going on that we want to talk about with our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, so we're open 5 days a week at this point. We were closed for just a couple months, which was pretty tough. But we used that time to really get our online store loaded, ready to go, functioning really well, and organized nicely. So you can go to freakopolis.com and check that out. We got lots of attack wing ships are up there, as well as I believe Legion, and tons of star or trade paperbacks and exclusive variant comics, and there's tons of good stuff up there. So check out freakopolis.com if you feel like supporting the geekery, my shop. We're coming up on 4 years in business and active and open on our little main street in Whitehall, New York. So we're celebrating 4 years in business on August 15th and 16th. It won't quite be like most of our sort of yearly celebrations. A lot of times it's kind of a party atmosphere with some sales and stuff. This will be a little bit Free Comic Book Day because that turned into Free Comic Book Summer, so we figured might as well roll it into our anniversary birthday party. So we're going to have free comic books for anybody who shows up, as well as some of our best sales of the year. So that's August 15th and 16th, and you can find out more info at freakopolis.com.
Absolutely, and there's a link to Freakopolis on our Facebook page, guys, Trek Talking and Beyond, so you can check that out. TJ, I wonder if they're going to make Lower Decks comic books, because that sounds like the perfect matchup to me.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'm super excited for Lower Decks. I really liked the trailer. I know I haven't been able to tell you guys, but I love animated series. It's like my favorite medium, and I thought, you know, it looked really fun. So I think comic books would be a perfect mashup. We've already seen the animated series, the original animated series, in comic form, so why not Lower Decks? I think that'll be a perfect opportunity for them to expand on the series some, keep the story rolling while they're making new episodes. They can be pumping out issues of comics. I think that's a perfect idea.
It is. It's a perfect, it's like a match made in heaven, actually. It's the perfect medium. And Charles,
they do that with Rick and Morty already. Like, they have episodes sort of being made while the issues, while the comic series is running and stuff. And we know that sort of similar pedigree with Lower Decks. So I wouldn't doubt that we might get some of that sort of synchronicity, some of that synergy going for sure.
You'll have to keep us in the loop as soon as anything comes out for Lower Decks, the comic book, if it does. Let us know. And Charles, what's going on around Las Vegas? Anything you want to mention?
Nothing going around in Vegas, but I do want to bring up something that I've been involved in over the weekend. And that was the Virtual Trek Con. If those are familiar, ever heard of the Seventh Rule, which was created by Aaron Eisenberg and was paired up with Sir Rock. And they decided this year, it's like, okay, we can't have it. We're not going to Star Trek Las Vegas has been moved to December, which a lot of people are not going to probably be able to make if it occurs. They thought, why don't they create their own convention? And the main host of the podcast had this idea in May 1st. And within a month, they had all kinds of guests lined up. Sometimes the guests brought guests with them. But they ran July 15th to July 20th through today. If you go to virtualtrekcon.com calendar, now you're thinking, well, how can I see the convention? It's over. No, it's not, because every panel was shown off on YouTube, except for a couple of ones that they added in later. But everything showed up on YouTube. You can go in if you want to go in. You can see the chat conversation that was going on during the convention. But some of the shows were pre-recorded. Some of the shows were live. They had great conversations. Mary Chifo's in there talking about what it's like to be in Klingon makeup and the prosthetic. And one of the stories of what it's like when you finally get to take it off after 12, 16 hours. Ironically, I'll let a tease in that specific one. You look in the chat, and we're just watching away the chat, see what's going on. All of a sudden, we start seeing people comment, like, wait a minute, is that Doug? Yes. It's like, oh, wow, there's Doug Jones talking in the chat form while they're having their panel. And, of course, Doug gets all kinds of love. He had his own he had another panel he was involved with. Ray Chifo does one, Women of Warp. I haven't seen it yet, but Michelle Nichols had a pre-recorded one that she did. There's all kinds of stuff going on. I need to actually put a link out to Sid City, because I think some of you may love some of the Together But Apart episodes that they're creating, which is almost like a virtual, a different season 8 for the Deep Space 9. which I found very interesting because it's just straight voice actors, two or three voice actors together. But they go through all kinds of stuff. Everything is on YouTube. You can sit back and watch them. I missed a couple yesterday. Going back today, rewatching them. It's worth going on. They had their own convention, and it doesn't cost you anything. I like that.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
It didn't cost anybody anything in it.
Well, you guys can
but
check that out.
They did a lot of hard work for that.
I want to say thank you to Jamie for hanging out and talking with us tonight about some Star Trek comic books. Thanks for hanging out, Jamie. Thanks for letting me hijack your
computer. No problem.
Computer.
Live long and prosper.
And thank you, Eric, for hanging out and Trek talking with us on Comic Corner about Star Trek. Thank you, Eric.
You bet, guys. Thanks very much. Stay safe out there.
And, of course, thank you to Charles for the same thing, for Trek talking about comic books and turning us on to Virtual Trek Con. Thank you very much, Charles.
Oh, always a lot of fun.
And, of course, it's great to have TJ back from Freakopolis Geekery over in Whitehall, New York. It's been a long time, but it's great to have you back with us. Thank you, TJ.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Very, very nice to be back.
It's great to have the whole gang back again. And, of course, I'm your host, Uncle Jim. Make sure you guys tune in Thursday night for Trek Talkin' and Beyond. We're going to have a nice Borg conversation. And next Monday, we're going to have Dayton Ward. We're going to be talking, well, Klingons and Drastic Measures. So you don't want to miss out on that. So be safe to everybody. Be good to each other. Be safe. And we'll talk to you really soon. Good night, everybody.
Night, y'all.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.